You know when you hear those stories of a builder that goes bankrupt and things that are going wrong and you think, oh, geez, what would I do in that situation? How would I have managed it? Well, today we have Kirsten Krauskopf, who has been through this situation. Her builder went into receivership partway through a build and you had to manage your way out of it.
I did.
Yeah, so stay tuned for how you actually do that.
Hi, I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with BuildHers.
Our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
BuildHer Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry, and as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
I just want to get this out of the way. We are going to refer to you as Captain Prepared.
Awesome. I much prefer KK.
Well, and I mean that preparedness and that level of detail that you go about your whole life is really what saved you in this situation.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think that the work that we did before we started in researching, speaking to previous customers of theirs, and then negotiating, I guess, some protective mechanisms probably saved us in the long run. And then just the detail and ownership of the project the whole way through. So there wasn't anything that we were missing. It's probably what saved us.
So you were building your dream home?
Yeah, we were. So we had a semi-attached townhouse and we felt that it was sort of hitting its ceiling in value. The market was pretty good. So we decided that we should sell and we were looking around for houses in our local area and we couldn't find anything that really suited us. So with the help of our agent, we decided that building would be the best course for us. So set about finding a block, found a site that we loved. And yeah, then set about finding a builder.
Yeah, so you did all the right things. So you interviewed people that had built with them previously.
We did, yeah.
You negotiated your tender and your contracts.
Yeah, we did. And what we liked about it at the time is that we were designing the house, building the spec, and then negotiating the price sort of concurrently, which suited us. It felt protective and I guess as people who hadn't built from scratch before, that felt like a safe zone.
What she's talking about there is instead of hiring an architect or a separate design team, the design team is inside the building company.
Yes.
And they manage the design through to completion and keep you updated with the price along the way.
Yeah, that's
now, when
right.
that works well, that is a magic situation.
Yeah, and it was a magic situation and it still is because we still got the outcome of the build that we wanted and we love our house. So it was definitely still worth the process, worth it in the end. But it was good that we could see what we were putting in and how that price was reflecting. And if, you know, at the end, if once the price was a little bit too high, we knew exactly what to pull out to get it back in and still be really happy with the product. So it did work for us. It may not work for everybody.
Different builders and different people have a different process and a process of openness and a process of getting through full design before they give you a price. And so that's all up for negotiation. And this one particular builder that you were working with had a really good name.
A great name. They were really well respected. They had a really nice product and their product resonated with us. And we'd been to sort of 3 to 4 finished homes and loved the feel and the look. I actually visited quite a few in construction as well. I think I walked through 3 sites of theirs just to get an understanding of their site. So I feel like we were doing everything right. Spoke to previous customers, all said, you know, we love our house. There was a few little niggly issues, but here's some suggestions of how to prevent that happening to you guys. And that allowed us to sort of negotiate some special conditions in our contract. So we were feeling like, oh, wait, we've got this. We have ticked the box here. We've done everything right. And we headed into it thinking this will go well.
And most of the time you would have had that and that would have been the outcome. But in this particular situation, that builder decided to, I guess, the reason why they hit trouble and administration is they steered outside their lane.
They did.
Right? They took on different styles of projects, which pushed them. One of those projects was really big and fell over, and the issues on that project meant that company-wide they were no longer able to trade.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, they built beautiful homes, and if they had just stuck to building beautiful homes and hadn't tried to push out into a different segment, like multi-res, they'd still be building beautiful homes today.
Yeah, and it's really sad. I know it was a really horrible time for you, but it would have been a really horrible time for that builder too, because
Definitely.
They'd built this business, they had a fantastic name, and they'd really tried to do well. So you're in this, I guess, trying not to swear, horrible situation.
Yeah, and it was a horrible situation. And I think that I was just the wrong person in the wrong place at the wrong time. I just happened to be the last house that they didn't quite finish, you know. And if we had been there 12 months earlier, they would have finished our house, and we would have thought, oh, look, we got out of that by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah, but if you had have signed contracts a little bit later, you would have been less finished than you were. So there's...
And that happened. There was many houses that were, you know, still, you know, not quite lock up, or others that signed contracts and they never got out on site. So with that perspective in mind, we actually did really well. We moved into a house. We finished it under builder's warranty insurance. That's still ongoing 2 years later, just little finicky things. But I still think it was worthwhile. We still love where we live. It did almost break us, but you just got to take the lessons, right? You've got to take what you learn from those experiences and what you would do better, or what you know you would do again, and roll forward. I still love the idea of building and developing.
And I guess what we thought was really advantageous was that you had in place all of these things that maybe people think are nice to have, or they'd have if they were running a commercial project, but domestically we just kind of let it go by the wayside. And we're like, oh, our builder's running late, but we're not on site. We're not checking things over. We don't really know what's in the spec or where we're at.
Yes.
But your method of managing this was really different. It was more commercially minded, I would have thought.
Okay.
And it's ultimately what saved you, plus the way that you came at it from a personal perspective. And I guess I wanted to kind of share that with people as really what I would say is it's a really good news story, because you were able to put those things in place and manage your way through it.
Yes, for sure.
When did you first notice an issue?
Probably about at the midway point.
So what was on site?
So we were probably getting to lock up.
Yeah.
And I just noticed things slowing down. And I think one of the important things to say straight up there is I negotiated that I was able to go to site weekly. With 24 hours notice. And I think you'll find a lot of builders only want you there monthly, and they, you know, might like a week's notice for you wanting to attend site. I was there weekly. I had a really nice relationship with our site manager, and we still have a great relationship. I think that's fundamental. So he was just happy for me to pop in. And I think that was one of my styles, is that I was there often, multiple times a week. So that gives you the opportunity to see the progress, or the lack of progress, or the lack of trades on site. And so I started to notice that things were slowing down, that there was a delay in getting trades out, and yeah, things just weren't progressing as they should.
There's a few things to note about that, because everything always sounds amazing in hindsight and when someone else does it, but be aware of your particular type of personality when you're visiting site. If you're a build everyone up and you're happy, you know, if you're pleasant to be on site, you're going to be welcomed on site. If you're someone who's overly anxious and trying to spot the problems because you're feeling like you could be taken advantage of, that's not going to be someone they want on site. And it's going to feel icky from both ways. So I guess you went into this going, okay, well, how do I build up this relationship, site foreman?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, I felt that it was fundamental to have good relationships on site. That was the key, not just our site manager, but engaging with trades, saying hi, making a point of knowing who they were, having a conversation where you're up to. And so, yeah, I felt like when things went poorly down the track and I was able to make some phone calls to those trades, they knew who I was and they were happy to have a conversation with me, and there was some trust built. But I think if I hadn't been on site, or I'd been that sort of less friendly personality in the beginning, I wouldn't have had the traction to sort of investigate.
And no longer do they want to please you, right? Because instead of saying, oh, what's happening there? Tell me about that detail. How are you doing that? You're like, is that wrong? Are you sure you meant to do it like that? How does that come out? is that going to look right with the thing? Yeah. You see how you're getting to the same point, but one of them's framed negatively and the other one's got that really positive spin and it's inquisitive and curious.
Yeah,
and the
right.
other one is coming from a place of fear.
The other side is important, right? You need to have somebody on site that can have a look at things in a more negative light. But then I hired a private building inspector to
critical,
do that for me.
Critical, slightly critical.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know what a plumbing stack should look like. I don't know what a slab should look like the day before it's poured. That's just not my skill set. So we decided that we would hire a private building inspector. He came in at pre-slab pour, at frame, fix and fit off, lock up and pre-handover inspection.
Okay, so what we're talking about here is slightly different to a building surveyor. So a building surveyor will check that everything's done in accordance with, in Victoria, the VBA and the regulations, the building code, the NCC. Like we're checking that things are done as they should be, but they're also not checking that things are in accordance with the plan. So, and our best practice. So that's where your private building inspector has more of a light on that because they're able to say, well, hang on, you've forgotten to put the stack in this location. It's on the plan. The building surveyor is checking that all the steel is correctly tied off.
That's right.
Not that everything's in the right location. So you've got two people working concurrently with similar names but performing a very different
performing
job.
Performing a really different job, yeah. So the building inspector is there for me to make sure that my working drawings and my spec and the quality of the build that I'm paying for is achieved. So he would be out there, he would generate a report on site. Any defects that he picked up, he was walking through with our site manager. And then I had negotiated into the contract that all of those defects would be rectified and demonstrated before my next invoice would be due and payable.
Right. So you motivated the builder to get them fixed off.
Yeah, that's right.
Straight away and not just demonstrate at the end
yeah,
that they'd
right.
done them.
And look, there were very little things. And that's of great comfort given where we ended up is that I have those solid, you know, like hard reports that say this house was built to a really high level. This was a really quality build. And that's really comforting maybe when we sell down the track and people say, oh, well, that house was built by that company and they went out of business. You know, there's no question mark about whether they
were a good builder.
Or
I mean, this is the other
or,
thing, right? They were a good builder.
They
had a
builder.
Great system. They had a great process and they were covering themselves on the way through and it was unfortunate that you got wrapped up in that mess. So you've started noticing that people aren't coming to site but you were speaking to the trades on site. So
yeah, look, I started asking lots of questions and at the time the site manager was probably towing the company line. So I would, you know, ask trades, ask a site manager. I had a direct line to one of the directors of the business. And, yeah, I just wasn't getting – my gut feel was that something was wrong. My gut instinct is normally right, so as with everybody. So I just started to just ask lots and lots of questions and take – let's just say it, call out bullshit. And, you know, I was saying I don't believe that's to be true. I've spoken to this trade. They're telling me this. And so, yeah, we just had to start having hard conversations and document everything. So, yeah, lots of hard conversations and always follow it up with an email so that it was in writing, always.
Yeah, and I guess when you've gone through that process, this friendly to kind of changing to be a harder or more difficult conversation, you were still relying on the relationships and you weren't being aggressive but you were being very firm.
Yeah, I think just being confident that I knew my rights, being confident that I knew the product that I was paying for and what I was expecting to receive.
Without explicitly saying either of those things because you didn't want to get anyone offside really quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. and it is. It's a really difficult sort of position to tread.
Balance.
It is. So you're trying to keep the conversations open and the willingness to actually keep talking to you, but at the same time make it really clear that you're not going to be a pushover. And, you know, there was a conversation where I said that. I was like, you know what, you can go and screw somebody else. You know, if you want to go and walk over somebody else, do it to another one of your clients, but it's not going to happen to me. I can see exactly what's going on here and nothing's going to pass me. I know the working drawings. I know the spec. I understand my rights within the contract. You're there to supply me a product and you're going to do it. And I'm not the right person to screw over, basically. And that's, you know, it's a really difficult position to be in.
It's really confrontational.
It's really confrontational. And my husband was working in Sydney at the time, three small children. So it was a lot of pressure. But I guess the confidence to stand up in a really intimidating environment came from my confidence that I was across the detail, that I knew the ins and outs of the project, that I was there so often, that I was really prepared to ask questions.
Well, and you'd asked so many questions along the way that you understood what was happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess that's the thing, because you were initially coming at it from that really inquisitive, like, what's happening here? How's this going? Yeah. So they're used to you asking questions. So it doesn't sound like you're all of a sudden coming in and asking a whole heap of questions. You're
kind of
keeping that relationship going, and then people know you and trust you and like you and want to help you.
Yeah, definitely with the site manager. One of the other things that identified that wasn't quite right was the progress reports that attached with the went along with the invoices. So I did not pay a single invoice in its original form. I marked up every single invoice we ever received, and that was because I was on site and I could see actually what had happened from month to month. I'd say that's not there. That hasn't arrived.
So we're getting because most people will be using a standard contract, which has, you know, five different areas. It's like pre-slab, slab, lockup. Yeah?
Yeah.
But you had a more detailed.
We were receiving a more detailed invoice and a progress report. So we were doing monthly invoices that was based on progress. And so there would be
Elemental or trade breakdown?
Elemental.
So what she's talking about there is it's a list of everything that's on your site and a percentage. So it might be slab, windows, carpentry, plaster, skirts, arcs. And so that meant that you were able to go through when you were doing that and say, okay, well, the windows, you're claiming 100%, but there's three windows that aren't in.
That's right. That's right. Or, you know, I remember one was the plaster. They had charged for 85% of plaster completion, and they had only just finished downstairs. And so, you know, I would mark it up and say, have another go at it. Because I was on site yesterday and clearly the plaster is not 85% complete.
And that's not necessarily an uncommon thing to see things pushed. And this is why banks require valuation, bank valuations. And certainly, again, taking commercial principles, this would be something that commercially you would do. Each claim would be marked against an elemental breakdown. But because houses are normally of a lower value, we tend to do them in stages. But when you're doing it in the way you're talking about, you're critically thinking. And I guess what you're protecting when you're going through like that is the cash to complete the project.
That's right. And look, those numbers were always wrong on the progress reports and invoices. So I was marking that up as well. And so when those were not being calculated correctly and when the percentage completions weren't quite right, I was like, hang on a minute, we're trying to push through here every month, things that are not quite complete. What's that telling me? It's telling me that they're trying to reach for more cash.
They need cash,
And they're trying to get cash. So, and
not uncommon for builders to want to try and get cash, but it's the level to which they're trying to push that cash.
Sure. And that when you can see on top that, you know, things are slowing down or trades don't seem to be returning and you start to sort of form a more full picture, then you've, you know, got reason to be concerned and reason to start investigating why that is.
Okay. So at this point, you're being critical when you're reviewing the progress claims and protecting the cash left in this project to complete.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're also speaking to all the trades you can see and you've had a hard conversation. How did it turn from that to you working directly with the trades?
I had built a really nice relationship with our site manager. I think he's got three young kids, so we had built a really nice rapport. And he called me one day, I think I just asked too many questions, and he knew that I knew. So he said to me, are you coming to the site today? And I said, yeah, I am. And he goes, can you meet me around the corner? I don't want you to come to site. And I was like, okay, no worries. So we
rendezvous.
Yeah, I know. It was a bit awkward. we're good mates by now, so it's fine. But he just said to me, I can't lie to you anymore. I really respect you. I don't know how you haven't broken yet. You're the strongest person I know. I just don't know many people that wouldn't have cracked at this point, and you're clearly not going to crack, which I'm amazed by, but I can't lie to you anymore. So he just said to me, the reason the garage door hasn't arrived is because the garage door for the last house hasn't been paid for. The brickie's walked off site because he's owed 30K. The front doors, they haven't accepted the order yet because they're owed 45,000 from other things. And I was like, right, okay, here we are. This is it.
And so in that moment, what were you thinking? Bit of adrenaline?
Yeah, there's a lot of adrenaline. I mean, there's adrenaline now even talking about it. It's, you know, it raises, you know, some pretty bad memories.
Pretty emotional time, right?
Yeah,
You're playing with your family's future and your wealth, and you've got all these hopes and dreams pegged on it, and at this point you don't know your outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually one of the fundamental things that I wanted to say today is that in order to progress this and in order to come out the other end, you do need to detach your emotions. But that is almost impossible when this is going to be your family home and you do have a lot of money tied up in it. So I did my very best to detach my emotions and just focus on the detail, focus on the contract, focus on our documentation. But of course, that's really tricky. So yeah, look, I said thank you for the truth and thank you for the conversation. And I drove straight to the builder's office and walked straight in and they all just looked at me and I said, a meeting right now. Oh, they're busy. No, they're not. I'll wait in the boardroom. And I walked myself into the boardroom and I sat down and I said, I want them all in here right now. And one of them came in. He was sort of the man sent into the firing squad, as it may be. And I can't quite believe I had the balls to do it. But I sat down and said, what is going on? They just said, it's all bullshit. It's all lies. And I was like, not every single one of your trades is telling me a lie. So I'd like the truth. So I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't get it. But we just went away and we started putting things in writing. And eventually I had one of the other directors call me and he said, look, I admit we've got a problem. We have just come out of a meeting with the bank. We've taken a $3 million loan to clear our debts. And the first thing we'll do is get everything moving back on side for you. And promises, promises, promises. So I said, okay, well, I'm watching. And if that's not true, I'm going to become the squeakiest wheel. I'm not going to be in a situation where I don't have a house at the end of it.
Because, I mean, they're trying to protect their houses as well, right? So
yeah.
The company structure is set up to protect their houses. And no, they didn't mean for this to happen. And my guess would be they were trying to trade their way out of it and get out of it without losing everything, because when they lose a business like that, they do lose everything that they've worked for. So it's just, you know, like if it had worked the other way and they had found a way to keep going and get through
right.
it, that would have been great. But they didn't.
They didn't. And ultimately they lost their trade accounts. So they couldn't get supplies. They lost their builder's insurance as well. So ultimately we forced occupancy and we insisted on taking the house over. That was advice that we'd received. Just get the house, even if it's not complete. So it didn't have lineal slot diffusers. It had temporary doors on the front door. The fence was half built, but we got in there and got occupancy of the house.
Now that's kind of the opposite process that we normally suggest, but given your situation, you're taking repossession of the site, because if an administrator comes in, then it becomes wrapped up with that administration as well.
Yeah, that's right. And slowly things were getting finished and I would say to them, I'm no longer paying you. So when a trade comes out on site and the job's done, then I pay them. Or we will only pay when work is completed and we'll only pay for that trade. So if that trade's work was worth 4K, then you get 4K that goes to them. So we did that for some time and that definitely got us through the overwhelming majority of the work. And yeah, eventually they went under. We weren't informed by them. We saw it in the news. And then we worked under builder's warranty to complete it. So yeah, tricky.
Really tricky. And then the fact that you're still smiling. And I know even going through the process of telling this story, I can see how tense like you just got.
Well, 'cause, you know, I could say so much more. And I, you know, it was really nasty. And some of the conversations were incredibly, incredibly nasty. And we live in the same local area as a couple of the directors. So we come across each other every now and again and it's awkward. But my takeaway is that I did my best. I was a full-time project manager. And I know that if I hadn't been a full-time project manager, the house just would probably have been half finished.
And that's not
and
to, you know, to scare anyone who's building, but these things, they happen. So you can take the best and the most progressive, protective measures possible, but you also need to be there. You need to be understanding what's going on. So I'm going to get you to surmise this to the three things that you think made the biggest difference.
Yeah, sure. I think it's a before, a during and an after. So before it was negotiating strong terms We negotiated the absolute upper limit of liquidated damages that we could negotiate. Yeah. We knew our funding was really solid, and so we felt comfortable knowing that we wouldn't delay the project.
Yeah.
So we negotiated really high liquidated damages. That really helped when the administrators came knocking on our door, because we hadn't paid for our project in full. We were switched onto the creditor list pretty quickly. That and feedback and, you know, knowing where we sit and just the special conditions that we were able to negotiate in. So that was my before. That's really crucial. Do your homework before you even enter it and make sure that you're setting things up so you're protected. The during is, if you're going to build and you're going to run this process, then make it your baby. It has to be something that you put everything into and be across every minute detail. That's what saved me. I could see everything that was happening, and I could see everything that wasn't happening, and I knew every single working drawing detail. I knew the ins and outs of my spec, but I also knew my rights. I understood the contract, and I wasn't scared to talk to it and set my expectations and be uncompromising.
And you understood what was going to happen when, and you had the right advice. You had a team of people around you that were providing you unbiased advice.
Yeah, that's right. And I think I had a project management background. So the running the project and the detail, I was comfortable with that. But the understanding the technical elements of construction is not my thing. And so hiring a building inspector that came and checked all of that off for me was of great comfort. I guess relationships, communication on site, and being a boss, basically, like being confident enough to have really difficult conversations, but do it in a respectful way, but demonstrating that you are not a pushover, that you're the client and what your expectations are, and being uncompromising in my expectations.
Well, this is your home. This is, you're going to have to live there for 30 years. So you not being willing to fight for a defect to be fixed because it's all too much in a moment, it's going to stick with you for 30 years.
That's right. And I was given some pretty nasty nicknames, you know, and they called me all sorts of things and they got really stressed.
No doubt.
But as I said to them, I'm not intimidated by you. I'm not intimidated that you're the directors of a serious building company. I'm not intimidated because you're male and I'm female, or you're 15 years older than me. I'm your client and I'm paying you to deliver me a product, and you're going to do it. And I am going to try everything I can to get this house finished. And it took a little while to recover from the process, but I still love building and I still love developing.
I know.
And I still love property. So it didn't kill me. So yeah, ultimately what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I'm happy I found my way to you guys so that I can keep going on that journey.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing. I guess, you know, being prepared was one of the biggest things that you brought to that table, but also the willingness to kind of show up and stand up when things are hard, because they are hard and they are emotional, and it's so much easier to walk away and try and get someone else to deal with it. But you did an amazing job. So thank you for sharing that journey as well, because that is a tricky one.
It is a tricky one, and, you know, if any of the builders or developers go through a tricky situation and I can offer some advice on how I pulled through it, I'm always around for a chat. As you know, I love a chat.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to Building with Builder. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Build Her with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.